Hi, I'm David Freudberg, host of Humankind, and I love my work, the opportunity to talk with remarkably enlightened people about things that really matter to all of us. And honestly, the most fun I have is when I hear from listeners I've never met, often from places I've never visited, who've been touched by our Humankind program. The grants we get from the funders you hear named on our program simply don't cover all our expenses. And if you like what you hear, we're asking for your help so we can keep the program and this podcast going. Please visit humanmedia.org and at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Thanks.
What we found is that the polarization and the rhetoric around physician-assisted suicide had kept these groups from exploring the common ground on end-of-life care. And when we were able to get there, there was a great deal in common.
Opposing organizations come together on the need for compassionate care of people who are dying. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. On a question as emotional as assisted suicide for the terminally ill, is there any point to a dialogue among people of deeply divided views? In Colorado, where libertarians and religious groups clashed vehemently, advocates on both sides were quite wary.
Their assumption is that they will be attacked verbally. The assumption is that it will deteriorate into a shouting match. And we are in many ways swimming against the tide of incivility.
Mike Hughes, based in Boulder, is a highly skilled mediator with a record of facilitating contact and conversation among people locked in dispute. His challenge is all the greater when deeply held convictions about freedom and dignity, about life and death, rise to the surface in a bitter conflict. At stake for the participants are not just important issues of public policy, but also crucial personal beliefs about human existence itself. The intricate machinery at this hospital intensive care unit symbolizes the lengths we will go as a society to preserve life. When someone we love is ill, our natural impulse is to seek out optimal care. But who should determine the limits of care? Can a patient's pain be too much pain? Is it playing God to decide that? Or is it compassion? Those were some of the choices deliberated by 25 people who met over the course of 10 months for the Colorado Dialogue on End-of-Life Issues. It was organized by CDR Associates and Healthy Outcomes, neutral mediation firms. Participants included healthcare providers, religious activists, hospice workers, and representatives of insurance companies and government. The private discussions, moderated by Mike Hughes, revealed a wide spectrum of sensitivities.
I think one of the interesting threads of the conversation had to do with the role of healthcare providers, how they do what they do, and what role they're taking at the end of life. And that ranges from some difficult conversations about assisted suicide and whether we are undermining a very important profession in our society and whether we are doing great harm to the professional responsibility and the professional dignity of a healthcare provider by asking him or her to participate in hastening a death. We talked a lot about the importance to society and to specific individuals that they felt their healthcare providers are trustworthy. And would we be undermining that trust relationship between a nurse and a patient or a doctor and a patient? And would people come to believe that their doctor might try to kill them? And the conversation was that direct. I was very impressed by the level of commitment and the deep concern among the healthcare providers. Because what joined them was this very deep concern for the work that they do and for the trust that they hold. We wondered with the participants whether it was possible to be all of those different things at once, to be trusted that you would do everything in your power as a professional to fight an illness and to heal. And at the same time, when that inevitable moment comes, that you could also be trusted to provide compassionate care at the end. And would that compassion extend so far as helping someone die more quickly than they might have otherwise? And that's a very difficult perspective to integrate. And the whole group struggled to explore ways that that might be possible.
The debate over end-of-life care ranges from medical ethics and personal values to public policy, such as the Oregon law known as the Death with Dignity Act, which permits doctors to prescribe lethal doses of medication to gravely ill patients in pain.
At one end of the spectrum are those who are advocating very strongly for a legalized right to physician aid in dying and would like to see the laws in every state changed and the federal laws changed to follow suit with Oregon and make it legally acceptable to get aid from your own physician, choosing the moment of your death and in some ways the manner of your death. I think at the other end of the spectrum would be those who find the very idea of assistance in a suicide morally reprehensible. For some of those, their perspective comes from a religious point of view. They believe that it is not God's will that we would interfere in the process of the end of life and that we ought not tamper with the manner or the timing. And we certainly shouldn't be asking doctors to end someone's life. In our initial conversations with potential participants, many said that they believed that the issue was intractable, that there was no possibility of any kind of agreement, and that they personally were completely unwilling to change their own point of view. I think the most common experience for some of the participants had been in debates with one another, and they had essentially been talking to an audience, but not talking to each other, in the same room, debating one another on the right or wrongness of assisted suicide. The conversation we tried to create was a more direct and personal and face-to-face dialogue that gave them the opportunity to really hear the different points of view and to understand why different participants held those points of view, what personal experiences had led them to conclude what they had concluded about assisted suicide. We found it very important to create an opportunity for people to tell their own personal story of a family member's death or of the possibility of their own death. One of the participants in the conversation talked about his own prognosis and the possibility of ending his life in a way that would not unnecessarily burden his family financially. And so people were able to talk very directly and personally about the experience of their grandmother's death or of their father's death or of their own illness. And that made the conversation very different. One of the stories that came out in the conversation was about a death from cystic fibrosis and the pain that came with those final moments and the desire to ease that pain and to provide enough morphine in this case, that one would have to wonder whether or not you're hastening death. In this case, it was a family member, and one of the participants spoke very directly and very personally about his sister's illness and about her final moments and her living with cystic fibrosis and the end of her life and his presence in the final moments. It was very, very powerful. He's a doctor, and so in many ways he was an extraordinary participant because he wore so many different hats. He could talk as a brother, he could talk as a patient, he could talk as a healthcare professional. And in that moment, he was all of those things and spoke about how important it is to try to balance all of those roles and bring his knowledge and at the same time bring his deep compassion for his family member's life.
Finding a balance among competing needs was the task which faced participants in the Colorado Dialogues, at times a tense exercise among sincere people who had disagreed with each other, often in public and inflammatory ways. The aim was to respect strongly held beliefs, while at the same time allowing space for areas of common ground that had previously gone unacknowledged.
Well, one of the things that I do as a mediator is try to create a process that people will believe is trustworthy and that they will feel that they can safely participate in. So the first thing we did was create a document that clarifies the purpose for the conversation, lays out a series of ground rules that people agree to abide by, including how they would speak about the dialogue to members of the media or to their own constituencies, and how they would treat one another while we were talking. And then we began to give people an opportunity to get to know one another. So we did some introductory exercises and just got people talking to one another. And from the very first meeting, we asked people to speak personally. And so it began right away. But it took time. It was a slow process of people opening to one another and beginning to trust that the conversation was not a setup for them, that we were not going to try to arm twist them into giving up their point of view or to change their values, and to come to see that their fellow participants would handle what they said in trustworthy ways.
The ancient Eastern custom of honoring one's foe, even on the battlefield, is a civility that has all but vanished from many modern arenas of public discussion. In a climate of name-calling and personal attacks, it can be difficult to establish a safe zone in which those who differ can explore their deep concerns and motivations.
It's on the minds of the participants when we call them and ask them to participate in a conversation like the one we tried to create. And one of the things that I think leads to people saying yes, they are willing to participate in a conversation with a mediator, is that I think people are hungry for a different way of being spoken to and are looking for a level of respect that they don't find in their daily interaction. They don't find on the road when they're driving down the highway in a traffic jam, or that they don't find in the public arena. And despite the fact that I think in political campaigns, the strategists have discovered the success of negative campaigning, I think there is great hunger among the public for a more thoughtful, a more respectful, a more decent airing of the issues.
Clearly, the political strategists have proved that in many cases, the low blow wins. That's why they keep going back to it over and over again, since their sole objective seems to be to win. So the public does somehow respond.
Well, I think it is a paradox. And one of the things that is advantageous as a mediator is to remember that people are paradoxical, and that I'm, in fact, a whole jumble of paradoxes. And there are times when I can be uncivil, and yet I hunger deeply for more thoughtful conversations and greater civility. We aren't always our best selves. So we do respond to negative advertising, and it can work. And hopefully, one conversation at a time, one election at a time, one political event at a time, we can begin to chip away at the negative discourse that characterizes public life.
How important in bringing people together, in promoting understanding, breaking down barriers, is the medium of personal storytelling?
I think there is nothing more important in the conversation in Colorado than the personalizing. And I think when we had difficulty having the richness of the conversation we had hoped for, we were talking in detached or more abstract ways. And when we were able to talk in more personal terms, the tone of the conversation changed. Those who disagreed with each other about assisted suicide, I think, softened toward one another when listening to a story that is personal. And when people were willing to talk about their own illness or the illness of a loved one or of the personal experience of their own mother's death, the human connection made the next part of the conversation more respectful, more thoughtful, more courteous, and perhaps most importantly, allowed people to speak more truthfully, more frankly, to explore the substance more deeply. And so it gave the conversation greater depth, and we were able to get to issues in more successful ways.
Participants in the Colorado Dialogues about caring for the terminally ill proved unable to reach agreement on the policy question of whether assisted suicide should be a choice sanctioned by society. But to the surprise of some, the 8 months of deliberations and listening did illuminate significant areas of consensus.
Among the things that we spent time doing was exploring the values that underlie the different points of view about assisted suicide. And we found that there was agreement that these are the core values, values of autonomy and personal choice, the value of the sanctity of life, the value of the trusting relationship between patients and their care providers. And there was agreement in the room that these were the core values. So we found some common ground there. What we found is that they didn't hold those values in precisely the same way. And so one participant would weigh autonomy more heavily than the sanctity of life, or would be more concerned about the quality of life than life itself. And there were different individual perspectives, different weighting, if you will, of those different values, and yet the values themselves were held by everyone. The more substantial agreement has to do, though, with end-of-life care, and on that front, there was much agreement. And in fact, the group made very specific recommendations about improving end-of-life care, including that there ought to be more conversations and more efforts like this conversation shared publicly about death, about what we would want for ourselves at the end of life.
A need for more conversations because we're in such denial as a society about the natural process of death.
Mm-hmm. One of our participants reminded us frequently that life and death are one, that we separate them, we give them two separate labels, but we are moving toward our own death from the very moment of our birth, and that we have to find ways to integrate those ideas. And as a society, we need to find ways to have deeper conversations about death and move past what is a fairly strong societal denial of death. So often, someone who is dying is set aside or moved apart rather than kept as a member of the family, integrated into daily life, living at home. I was able to be near my great-grandmother when she died, and she died in my grandmother's home. And now I live in a city that's different than the city my parents live in, and my sister lives across the country. And I think in many ways we have moved apart as families. And so there is not, in very many cases, that kind of experience that I had as a child. And I know from talking to other people that my experience is rare.
Of having seen your great-grandmother decline.
Mm-hmm. And that in many families, that's not what they know. And those family ties or those family experiences of the end of life were not integrated as closely into their daily life. And that may be one of the reasons why this was a conversation that I thought was useful, because that was a very powerful experience for me.
What effect do you think does are being so shielded from the natural dying process of a human life have upon our own lives?
I think one of the effects is that it makes our own end much more traumatic, or it makes the end, the last days for our loved ones more traumatic both for them and for us, because we haven't thought about it, because it isn't part of our daily life. When it comes, it's a shock and it's terribly traumatic. And so I think that's one of the difficult consequences. I suppose I believe that another of the consequences is that we may not live our daily life as fully as we would if we were more mindful of how temporary our life is and more mindful of the 100% statistic that death will come to all of us. And I think we might live more profoundly, more useful lives if we were more mindful of the end.
Those taking part in the Dialogue on End-of-Life Issues held in Colorado concluded their discussions with a joint statement. While still disagreeing about assisted suicide, they did reach unanimity on the need to improve care for people who are terminally ill. They came together in the belief that poor end-of-life care should never be a reason for a gravely ill person to seek assistance in dying.
Among the recommendations that the group made are some very specific recommendations in the way healthcare providers are educated, that their training should resonate with this idea that death is inevitable, that it is not an enemy to be overcome, but is a natural part of living, and that that training should also include a greater sensitivity to the whole person rather than focus on a particular illness.
What does that mean exactly?
I think the participants have the sense that many people suffer needlessly at the end of life or fail to get the care that they might because their healthcare providers are so singularly focused on defeating the illness that they miss the patient, that they fail to connect with and care for the patient in a compassionate way. A caregiver can focus on output from machines and focus on readings and monitors. And to use that as the primary information about the state of the patient and miss much that is happening with the patient in the bed, and to miss opportunities to speak with the patient directly, to ask about pain, to ask about comfort, to ask about fear, to ask about the dying process, to ask about the family, to ask about all of the things that make this person a whole person and contribute to his or her well-being and wellness that goes far beyond blood pressure, heart rate, and the other kinds of mathematical statements of health that come from a lot of the technology.
Where does the hospice movement fit into this spectrum where the philosophy is we are not going to resort to heroic measures to rescue people through high technology when their end is inevitable? Rather, we're going to focus on making their last days or weeks as comfortable as possible.
Hospice clearly stood as a tremendous example of what is possible and is a wonderful part of the answer to the recommendations that the group made, that there is better focus on pain management and palliative care. And the hospice movement in many ways is at the forefront of those questions. And I think the participants imagined that a hospice would become an increasingly important means of caring for patients in such a way that the demand for assisted suicide would decrease because people could have some assurance of the quality of care at the end of their life.
How about for you as mediator? I know you have to maintain a position of neutrality because that's your job. But of course you go in to these discussions as a human being and evidently a very sensitive one.
I did have a point of view on the issue going in. I was moderately in favor, though I have to say that I knew then and know even more deeply now that my opinion going in was not well developed and that I thought what Oregon was doing might make sense. The interesting thing is the transformation of the conversation for me, because I certainly didn't hold that opinion very tightly, and my very loose grip on that point of view was even looser as we went through the conversation. And I began to question some of the very easy assumptions that I'd come to and found myself exploring in different ways. And so I'm more skeptical of it today than I was then. And my opinion is very much in the air at the moment.
Mike Hughes, mediator of the Colorado End of Life Dialogues. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Our program is presented by Human Media in association with The Network Incorporated. Studio recording by Steve Colby. Editorial assistance from Art Cohen and Brendan Tapley. Special thanks to the Cambridge Health Alliance. Program development and support provided by Chart Media.
If you'd like to purchase a copy of Humankind by phone, please call toll-free 1-800-5-LISTEN. That's 1-800-5-L-I-S-T-E-N. To learn more about this and our other programs and to hear selected episodes online, check our website, humanmedia.org. That's humanmedia.org.
And if you'd like to send us an email, we welcome your comments and questions. The address is listeners@humanmedia.org. This segment on end-of-life issues with Mike Hughes is Humankind program number 22.
To hear more episodes of Humankind, you can subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast player. A new episode each week. The podcast title is Humankind on Public Radio. And if you enjoy this program, be sure to leave us a kind review at iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to support the program, please visit humanmedia.org. And at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Again, our web address is humanmedia.org. Thanks.